Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That, friends, was Master Mirth and inveterate storyteller Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Brieflies, strive with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. So as we always do, let's get started by introducing the Brieflies. Former Alaska Airlines pilot and Vachon Airport Commissioner Truman O'Brien, pending the votes, I know it's on the ballot.
That's right. I'm election coming up.
It is. I just turned in my ballot yesterday.
Good. I hope you voted for me.
The polling here in the Jones household is positive.
Oh, good. Thanks.
But glad to see you're still there at the dials, buttons, and knobs of the control panel and Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling, bodacious downtown Vachon. So we shall see. We'll hear the results of the election, hopefully, next week or two. Yeah. Next couple weeks. Right?
And Mason, for you, I'm running unopposed. So that's why it's going to be a close race.
It can be tough. There's always a possibility of write-ins.
That's right.
Hey, our own globe-trotting guardian of the galaxy is called away to address the multiple challenges currently faced these days by us mere mortals. Hopefully, Bruce will assure an effective speaker will be elected to navigate the U.S. House of Representatives through the murky waters stirred up by Representative Matt Gaetz after he threw Kevin McCarthy out of the job. So, Bruce, if you're listening, continue to do great work. See, also with Truman in the studio is Truman's wingmate, airplane co-owner, exceptionally bright Fulbright scholar, and a former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, Craig Bellis. How are you this morning, Craig?
I'm doing fine. Catching my breath. I got a lot going on today. But I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. And that aerobics training is probably paying off for you.
Get back on the rowing machine.
Okay. Hey, let us all welcome our small talk guests. First, Gib Damon, Zero Waste Vachon, and former owner of the Islander Apartments, which were recently sold to Vachon Household to help preserve local affordable housing in a move that was welcomed by so many on the island. Welcome, Gib, to the show.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for continuing the Brown Briefly, my fave show.
Oh, thank you.
Hoo-hoo. Well, you are not alone, is what I hear. But, the Voice of Vachon experts continue to evaluate how many folks are listening to the show today. Let's see. Also, we have Mason Rolfe, is the president of Olympia Community Solar and a member of the Washington Solar Energy Industries Association. Hey, Mason, thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and I'm excited to talk to y'all about my favorite subject, solar energy.
Man, that is coming right up after a few announcements, not the least of which, I am Kevin Jones, former sailboat builder, somewhat past my prime competitive cyclist, but mainly these days, the too often heard voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who are still striving to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate. But as you know, dear listener, we always jump into listening to what our Brieflies have been up to over the last week. So before we jump into things with small talk, Truman, how's things been going?
All right, I just got to tell you one quick thing. You know that okay. I have somehow angered the appliance gods. You've heard me go on and on about that, right?
There is a rumor.
Well, the latest about that. DirecTV went out, and we replaced everything, and now it works. But
what's left?
I don't know. I'm just afraid.
How are the lights in your house?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's already gone. The rats have already gotten into that. You know, what can I do? My gosh. Anyway, it just goes on and on.
Oh man, yeah. You know, there are good pest inspector services that are available on islands.
Yeah, I think I need one. Need to hire him. Oh, gosh.
What you need is the pests and gremlins inspector. I don't know if they have that yet.
Yeah,
poltergeist.
Yeah, poltergeist and gremlins for sure. That's right. Yeah,
exactly. Hey, Gib, good to see you again. I know we've been on the phone and you have been very busy as usual on the island. How's things working out for you these days? What have you been up to?
Working out well, and I'd like to tell you a really fine trip that I was invited to partake with some of my fellow Rotarians. Somebody invited us to take a walk last Saturday around Blake Island. And it was just a great reminder of how lovely a space we live in. Even in those gray days, even when it's piddling rain, it is so lovely out here, and we're lucky for it.
Now, Gib, I think I may have heard about this. You actually, do I understand right, you actually walked on the beach and not on the trails around the island?
Right. We walked all the way around the beach. It wasn't as far as we had heard. We figured it was about 3.5 miles total. But we walked around with a gentleman who used to work in the Department of Forestry and Steve Berkman, our resident geologist. And it was just fascinating, the conversations that shook out as we walked around the island. Highly recommend it.
Fantastic. Appreciate that nature report and the geology report as well. All right. Hey, Craig, how are your appliances treating you?
Well, they're being upgraded. We started a remodel of our kitchen yesterday, actually. And the contractor came by today after my wife and I started disconnecting things and removing doors from cupboards and doing all those sort of things. So our house is a little askew right now. So that's keeping us busy. I finished or almost finished redoing another set of stairs at our place. My wife finally got her to call me the stairmaster.
Nice.
She refused to do that for a long time, but I guess she did it once. She won't call me Stair Lord, but she did call me Stair or okay. Fred Astaire.
Well, the master thing is, you know, going out of style, so you got to be careful. That's about true. That.
I know. I got my cold and flu shot last Friday. Luckily, unlike my comrade sitting next to me, I didn't have a reaction to it. I
Boy, he did
cruised die. Right through there. But Truman, you did, didn't you?
Oh, sicker than a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a while.
Boy.
And let me see. Oh, yesterday I took my car into Tacoma for a little PDR work.
PDR?
Paintless dent repair.
Oh.
Which is nice. Quite an industry now.
I had no idea.
Yeah, little dimples and things like that they will remove from your automobile and make it look as good as new without putting any paint on it at all. And I would not have entrusted the 95 Porsche 911 to somebody to do that unless they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, you're happy with the results then?
I don't know. I haven't seen them yet.
Oh, I see. Oh,
I'll report great. Next week.
Okay. There we go.
Nice. Absolutely. We'll hear from the details.
That's right.
All right. Mason coming in to join us from Thurston County, at least, or somewhere probably near Olympia. How's things going with you?
Things have been really well with the return of the rainy season this weekend. I went on my first mushroom hunt of the season, and although the chanterelles were too elusive and I could not track them down, I found some oysters and some shaggy parasols and still had enough mushrooms for a good dinner, so I'm super happy.
Nice. Are you a mycologist? Is that the right term?
More of a mushroom foodie. I really love eating all the forest mushrooms, so that's my interest.
Nice. For our listeners, if you've never gone on a mycologist tour of mushrooming, I did so with the Mountaineers some years ago now, 2 day, and we ate mushrooms for every meal. And the groups would go out in searching mushrooms on the way up to the gathering, and they brought whatever they found. And there were literally like a half a dozen 4x8 tables loaded with mushrooms. And I was actually had a chance to go out to Mount Margaret this last week, and the mushrooms are in full fledge. So yeah, after a few little bit of rain, they're popping up everywhere. So
but
go check that out.
Those chanterelles are like snipe, aren't they? They're very difficult to catch, you know.
Mason, you'd have to comment on that one.
They're elusive. They are elusive and sneaky. Yeah, they like to hide. Yeah, so you really got to look. And sometimes I'll give up and, you know, sit down for a snack or something. And then I'll realize looking around that I'm just surrounded. They snuck up on me.
All right. Well, hey, just as so we know what day we're talking about here, in an act of amazing serendipity, today is the International Day Against Climate Change. And we just happen to be talking about solar energy in the show today. So what an amazing coincidence. Also today in history, the Charter for the United Nations, which is the world's premier international organization, which is established at the end of World War II to maintain world peace and friendly relations, entered into force this day in 1945. And certainly glad they are here because their mettle is being tested, of course, around the world, as we know. I'd just like to say possible future history. Within weeks, the majority of those former president's co-defendants in the racketeering-influenced and corrupt organization's trial regarding attempts to overturn the result of the 2020 presidential election in Georgia, within weeks, the majority of them will plead guilty. And it just so happens that we now have a total of 4 out of 18. So we're on our way. So we'll see if we make future history with that. All right, let's jump right into small talk. I'd like to discuss why we don't have community solar here on Vashon Mori Islands. And there's other topics, of course, related to low-cost renewable solar energy, which many people advocate for. So Mason, I would like to welcome you again to the show. Please tell us how you got involved in the world of solar energy and why is it your favorite topic?
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Mason Rolfe. I live in Olympia, the beautiful capital, and happy to talk with you all and your listeners today. I guess I started out as a climate activist, focused on a lot of larger scale issues. We participated in advocacy to the federal government promoting the Green New Deal back in the day. We worked on preventing big fossil fuel projects locally on the West Coast. And after a number of losses and a lot of disappointments with those efforts, we really needed something to bring us home, do something locally, tangibly that we can control. And so solar energy just seemed like the obvious fit. It's scalable, something we can do locally. And so, yeah, it was really a motivation by climate action that got me started in the industry. And now I'm going on 6 years in the solar industry, and our nonprofit has grown into a nationally recognized clean energy leader. Yeah, excited to talk to you all about solar today.
Fantastic. We learned so much every time we get together. Gib, our audience knows you very well, but may not know about your community solar work. I understand the solar panels on the Harbor School are there because of that work that you did. Tell us a little bit about what you are seeking to achieve in your interest with solar energy.
You bet. But first, I'd like to point out that Vashon Solar LLC, which surrounds Harbor School, is the only community solar project I know of in King County. Which is not a real plus for us. But first, I'd love to talk a little bit of my subjective perspective on the history of solar as Gib lived it. I believe that the first charge was made in something like 1896. our country started subsidizing fossil fuels in 1915, still do today. In 1953, I believe the first wafer, first module was created. That's my birth year, 1953. In 1970, I was 17, I was a little bit too much into music, drums, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. My father correctly realized that he needed to ground his son quickly. And so his solution was, one morning I get up for breakfast, and sitting at the table, and my father produces a Scientific American, and he says, "Son, I've read this whole magazine. You pick one article, we're going to talk about it over dinner tonight." And we had so many fascinating discussions about solar. And I remember at one point in time, I told my father, you know, I can't follow this finance stuff. I don't necessarily understand deficits and this and that and the other thing about big government. So I'm going to focus on solar. And so I did. In 1978, there was the first energy crisis that I know of. Jimmy Carter was president. At that time, 4 out of 5 U.S. manufacturers of solar modules were owned by fossil fuel companies. And sure enough, the 5th went the next year. And then Reagan comes along. In 1989, I moved out west in 1988 to get a master's in architecture at the University of Washington. I hope I never forget that in like February 1989, when it's really, really gray out there, I read that Boeing has discovered a way to increase the efficiency of a solar cell to 27%. And then the CEO of Boeing was quoted and said, you know, we really don't know what to do with this. Guess they didn't do much with it. Because in my opinion, nothing was done until Obama comes in and the Renewable Energy Act kicks in, and we partner with Christine Gregoire and now Joe Fitzgibbons, Governor Inslee. I have continued to build on basically 15 years. We have had solar in this country, I would argue, for 15 years, not 20. And we've really taken great strides. And so there's a real positive lesson to be pulled out of that, in my opinion. The question was, why did we do community solar? What drove us? And I say us, but there were some other folks on the island that really helped out. Holly Goddard was a great partner in success. Ted Claybaugh was very knowledgeable in securities law. I couldn't have done it without him, because that was the biggest pain in the Batutsky, was qualified to sell shares on behalf of my community solar project.
So our listeners can't see Mason nodding.
Yeah, the Department of Financial, DFI, man, they just worked me over, frankly. Okay. Why did we do it? And also, I don't know, 20 community investors. I got into it when with Bill Moyer, actually. And he went off and formed Vashon Community Solar. He was trying to get small investments, larger numbers of people participating. I became convinced that it was easier to do an LLC and accept the limitations that were defined in the various solar laws. And if I was successful, the measure would be how many more times that model would be used. And I think that it'll be interesting to hear Mason's comment on that. But at least we build it. It was a, why did we do it? It was a means of action for our community. And there were a lot of folks that were like-minded that wanted to drive toward that. We focused on the advancement of that technology. And indeed, it really has worked. Vashon Solar LLC opened up at $6.75 a watt. That's what it cost. We're looking at, I just did a turnkey on my house, actually 3 years ago, for $2.62 a watt.
Hey, Gib, I want to get you stopped here for a minute. And the reason is because I know that Kevin's got a question about the difference between community solar and net return. Anyway, he needs to ask that because we need to understand more about that before you go any further with your community solar, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right.
Okay, well, why don't we segue into that question then? Mason, we wanted to make sure that our listeners know that we'll be talking about two types of solar approaches. One is net metering, and the other is community solar. So could you tell our listeners how these are different?
Yeah, so both net metering and community solar are ways to financially organize solar projects and deliver benefits back to the owners of those projects or subscribers. They're the same technology, so the same solar panels. The difference is how they're connected to the grid and how benefits are delivered back to customers. So net metering refers to what you traditionally think of a solar project on someone's home or business or a school. The solar project is connected directly to the building. It's behind the meter. It's on the customer side of the electric meter. And those projects, they reduce the customer's energy demand to the grid. So reduce the customer's consumption of utility power and reduce their bill that way. And then the net metering part of it is that that any extra energy can flow back into the grid and the customer gets credit for the net amount that they either provide to the grid or they consume. So when we look at, say, a homeowner trying to install solar, the majority of their financial impact from that project will come from their electric bill savings. And say, if your solar install is generating a lot of energy in the summer, and you have extra energy that the building isn't consuming during the summer, net metering allows you to export that energy into the grid, earn credits for everything you provide to the grid, and then use those credits against future electric purchases. So imagine you're generating a lot of energy in the summer. You can earn credits and use those credits during high consumption winter months.
And just for clarification, you can't get paid for those, but you can get credit for them. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can offset 100% of the energy you consume over the course of a year, but the utility will not pay you for extra credits at the end of that period.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so
you only benefit to the extent that you use the power you generated. So is it fair to say that it reduces people's incentive to build more solar?
It's kind of a... it's a mechanism to make sure that people are installing the right amount of solar, right? It incentivizes people to install as much as they use, but not more, which it's an okay thought for infrastructure. But when we're really talking about how much clean energy we need on the grid, it would be amazing to incentivize the folks that can put solar on their homes to put as much as possible, because most homes cannot host solar panels, whether it's because they are shaded by trees or other buildings, whether it's a renter and they don't own their building, multifamily housing, old roofs. There's tons of reasons that prevent people from accessing net metering, and that's really where community solar comes in. So community solar are traditionally larger solar projects that are cooperatively owned by multiple customers, and multiple customers benefit from them. So let me give an example. Our team recently worked with the Olympia School District to site one of our community solar projects on a middle school roof. We installed 150 kilowatts on the middle school, and we invited local community members to either purchase subscriptions for their own benefit or donate subscriptions to local nonprofits. In the traditional case of community solar, a subscriber to one of these projects will pay a subscription fee to join the project, and then they will enjoy their energy benefits. In states where it's really going well, there's usually about a 20% net savings on each subscription. So in that case, say the cost of your subscription was $8, you would see about $10 of savings on your bill for a net benefit of 20%. The problem here in Washington, as Gibb was kind of hinting towards, is that we don't have policies that allow customers to benefit from community solar directly on their electric bill. And so in order to make it work here, people have to jump through a lot of hoops around financial regulations, other issues that really make it super hard to install community solar or make it work. That being said, there's a couple successful utility-owned community solar projects out there. Puget Sound Energy has a growing portfolio. It's really awesome to see. Clark PUD down in Vancouver just installed a huge community solar project, and it sold out in a number of hours. And so it's extremely popular, and where it's being built, it's working well. The big issue is that third parties cannot access bill crediting. We can't get benefits back to our customers. And most of those customers who qualify for community solar are the folks that can't put solar on their own rooftop, or folks that can't afford to put solar on their own rooftop. So it turns into a really big equity issue as well.
You know, Mason, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate it. You touched upon some barriers to solar, some of the issues, some of the difficulties that you run into. And I'm wondering, are there other kinds of barriers and that people would run into in either net metering or community solar? And how does your team approach those barriers to try to get rid of them?
Yeah, there are three main categories of barriers that I run into in our work. The first is education. So every single new solar customer is a first-time buyer, usually, unless they came from a different home with solar. And so there's a big challenge in educating people about a new technology, the policies that surround it, the incentives that surround it, you know, how they're going to recover their investment and make money from their solar project. So education is the first big barrier. I run into a lot of folks that perceive solar to be extremely costly, even if they haven't pursued a quote for their home and they don't know the real cost, just because that's kind of the media narrative around solar. So education is the first one. The second one is physical access to solar. It's do you own a sunny, good condition rooftop that can host solar panels? And that's maybe one out of eight people, or two out of 12. And then finally, the last barrier is financial. So can a customer afford a solar array or access financing for their projects? And so for homeowners, our team provide solar education services. We do a lot of workshops, talks, supporting homeowners to understand their solar potential. And then one of my favorite parts of that is to sit down with a homeowner when they actually have a quote and help them understand and choose whether or not to contract the project. And then we run a residential solar program where our team secures good pricing from reputable contractors. And we run a big group purchasing campaign each year called Solarize. And the goal of Solarize is to first get folks to sign up for site assessments, totally free, learn about the solar potential of their home. And then if they do decide to move forward, that they work with a reputable contractor and they get good prices. So we kind of streamlined all that through Solarize. Let me just say with Solarize, we've seen about 40% of Solarize participants utilizing a financing tool. So using a consumer loan to install solar, or maybe wrapping it into a mortgage, is extremely common. And most times, the energy savings from the solar project are more valuable than the cost of the loan. And so the customer still sees net benefit. I'll pause there.
Well, just so we can wrap around back for a moment, when you say we can help the consumer, just remind that for people who maybe didn't catch the very beginning of the show, who are we?
Yeah, my organization, Olympia Community Solar, we're a nonprofit solar energy development firm, I could call us. We have a mission to steward an equitable and accessible transition to clean energy, and we do that by building equity-focused solar projects and programs.
And how do people find out more about that organization?
Yeah, we're online at olysol.org, olysol.org. We're also on social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, at Olympia Solar.
Okay, great. Gib, I got a question for you. If you had your druthers, what would be your dream situation for Vashon Island regarding solar that you think is possible?
Well, I think the answer there is both general and particular to the island. So generally, I echo Mason's comments about debunking myths through education. There are myths out there like we don't have enough solar gain in the Northwest to make it worthwhile. We get 87% of the potential. That's plenty worthwhile. It doesn't pay for itself. It's not a good business investment. It is a very good business investment if you consider it long-term. If you're looking for a quick fix, it isn't. Go out and buy a gallon of gasoline. There's a quick fix for you. But if you think 8-10 years, it will pay for itself plus. It can't be profitable for the utility. I think that's another myth. Citizens are investing in PSE's infrastructure every time they put a solar module on top of their home or they participate in community solar. We're providing a massive amount of capital investment. So if you have to cut in, you know, if you have to give them a cent for every kilowatt hour to further incentivize, let's do it. But it's still worthwhile for them. So, and another thing, Truman, I think in general is that we need, as a society, we need to think to the future. We need to look at successful examples. And capitalize on them. We need to think in terms of battery storage. We need to think in terms of the microgrid for this island. We should be building the microgrid specifically for this island. We should have that focus, be able to do that. There's no silver bullet, in my opinion. Being familiar with in Zero Waste Vashon with the potential for methane, turning that into ONG, that's a real potential. Wind, hydrogen, and conservation. Now we're starting to get a little bit more local here. We need to provide loans, incentives that homeowners, multifamily, and business can't refuse, and capitalize on the connection that we already have with PSECU. It's their mission to provide low interest loans on this island. Let's call them on it. The issue of locations is maximum on this island because we have some of the best forest in King County, and we want to maintain that. We don't want to compromise that with solar. So in my opinion, that requires us to be able to create a different business model to be able to put a community solar project on an existing large roof. You know, what could you put on K2 and then join that up with Sheffield and Thriftway and IGA and on and on and on? There's a whole lot of solar potential right there. And it would be as simple as setting up a different business model. simplify the process is really important. Once again, look at that typical business model that eases the availability for investment. Look at permitting issues. Look at soft costs.
You know, give that.
One last point.
Yeah, please.
I think work with our state to eliminate the purchase power agreement, which sets a limit on what you can produce net metering wise before you are taxed or you give the energy free. It could be as simple as applying a simple surcharge, tax, service charge, and let the owner produce more than that particular meter is using throughout the year.
That actually is a great segue to some work that Truman, as airport commissioner, has been doing. He's been kind of leading the charge to perhaps find ways to get solar out there at the airport, because we have a lot of big hangars. And Truman, you and I, you got me to come out there with a tape measure for you, so you could figure out how much roof we had out there. What's going on
out
there?
I don't want to get people all jazzed up here because this may not happen. Mason and I spoke recently about putting solar at the airport. And there are some issues that we have to deal with. But the one question that I had, Mason and I really talked about net metering, correct, Mason? I mean, that was really what we're talking about, returning the benefit to the meter, you know, itself. But what would interest me most is this idea of community solar. And of course, now there are all kinds of barriers to that, which we're hearing already. But that to me would seem to me the applicable thing to do here. But I had another question. That is, we talked about putting it on buildings and on hangars and all. What stopped us from just putting it on a field? In a field, I mean, putting a big array out in a field. And Mason, you can address that if you would.
Ground mount solar arrays are really popular. A lot of folks that can't put solar on their home directly choose to use ground mounts. It's slightly more expensive because you're building a new structure for those solar panels, where a rooftop system utilizes your existing structure. But it works great.
Hmm. So this gets us back to these barriers about the community solar. So you've talked about education and physical access and financial barriers. What are the barriers that are actually up about community solar that's stopping us from doing that?
Yeah, so tons of people, just like yourselves, reach out to me saying, hey, we have this beautiful plot of land down the road. There's this nice open field where we want to put solar in to power our whole community or benefit our whole community. And it's really hard because most of the times I have to tell those folks no, because the only thing the Washington legislature has enabled so far is net metering. So solar projects on existing buildings or serving existing electric load. So in order to enable community projects like those, we really need state policy from legislators. And that's something our nonprofit has been working on, going on now for the fifth legislative session, so 5 years now. And so the key things that community solar policy does is, one, it allows third parties, aka not utilities, to install community solar projects and get benefits distributed using the utility billing system. So we need utilities to, you know, track how much energy is produced by the solar array and then send energy credits out to all of the participants in that project. That's a really key part of.
And once again, you have to belong to that community project that you're talking about, correct? And then
you'd be a subscriber and also a customer of the utility that's serving the the project. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
The second part of that policy is rules around what's the value of those community solar credits. So a community solar credit is, it's really hard to value. How do you value something where the resource is free? Sunlight is totally free. And so our solution, which will be in our legislative proposal, is simply directing the state energy regulator to perform what's called a rate-making procedure, where they consider all the values that solar energy provides to the grid, to people, and determine how much those credits are worth. So yeah, the two really big important things we need in the policy are, one, the ability to get bill credits to customers. That requires utilities to play ball. And then two, have the state decide what those energy credits are worth. The alternative, which is kind of what's currently happening, is that only utility-owned projects are allowed, unless the utility, you know, is willing to voluntarily connect someone else's, which in my experience, they've turned us away every time we've asked. And then two, the utilities can create their own credit rates. They can value that solar energy at whatever rate they want to currently. And right now, that's a much lower rate than what we know it's worth. So yeah, what we're asking is, just like net metering, the state should provide guidance and support. So super excited to say that Representative David Hackney from South Seattle is sponsoring our legislative proposal. It's being organized under a banner of Community Solar WA. We have a website, communitysolarwa.org, where this whole effort is being organized. Folks can sign up for a news listserv on that website, and we're encouraging folks to prepare written comments to their legislators asking them to support the policy in the upcoming session, which starts in January.
All right. Well, Mason, I was just going to mention that, you know, Vashon Islanders have our senator, state senator, is the chair of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee. So Senator Wynn will certainly be seeing that legislation. And Representative Joe Fitzgibbon is presumably will again be the House Majority Leader, which means that Joe has tremendous influence over what bills move through the House. So great that you mentioned those opportunities for our listeners to go out and check out the website, sign up for the news listserv. I assume that's the primary way that people would be able to provide direct support to the legislation in the upcoming session, or are there other ways?
Yeah, individuals just signing up on the website. There's a barriers to solar survey on the website. If you've encountered something that stopped you from installing solar, we would love to hear your story and support you in sharing your story with legislators so they understand the issue. And yeah, we're really asking folks, put together a written comment or a letter to your local representative. We're happy to support you in drafting that letter if you're not quite sure what to say. And then yeah, the call to action, if you're on our email listserv, we'll send it out in the new year. We'll be also to show up at the legislature and provide public comment in support of the bill. Again, all of this is organized at communitysolarwa.org.
All right. And so, Mason, I can envision people would write a letter saying, hey, I really want community solar. I also envision people saying, hey, I really, just like Gib is saying, you know, multiple attempts to try to put solar installations on the island, or people who live in a home that just wouldn't be allowed to have solar because of the ownership issue that you mentioned, or shading or what have you. Any other ideas for topics that people might want to consider notifying their legislator, or those kind of like the top two that come to mind?
Our community solar bill needs support from the public, and obviously y'all are in a key district for that with your representatives. There will also be a legislation addressing net metering working to expand net metering and make it more accessible to homeowners. So that's something to engage in too. That effort is being led by the State Solar Industry Association, WASIA, under the banner of Stand Up for Solar. And you can find that on WASIA's website or standupforsolar.org. And yeah, I will say WASIA, the industry association, are trying to bring more people under the umbrella and recently created a new membership type where just any individual or solar enthusiast can join the association and support their efforts. It's called a solar ambassador. I think it's about $50 per year to sign up for that, but it gets you access to the WASIA network and the WASIA newsletter. So if you really want to geek out about solar news and what's going on around Washington, that's a great way to stay in the know.
And what is that website again, please?
Yeah, WASIA.org, WASIA.org, or Stand Up for Solar is their legislative campaign.
Okay, thanks.
You know, and those Kevin, if I may, those of us who are a little geeky on this subject, is there one of those sites or another site that's particularly good to look at to see what the status of new developments in the area of solar energy? I'm talking about actual physical, mechanical. I have a electrical engineering relative who's been working on solar panels that up the ante at night for recovery of electricity. You have any recommendations there?
Anyone?
You're asking Mason about that?
There are a couple of industry magazines I might recommend, like Solar Power World is a great one. And a lot of our installer partners, they'll rely on like a monthly magazine like that or that website's, how to say that magazine's website virtual option to get their news about upcoming products, you know, new developments in the industry. So that's just one of them, but I know there are a couple. So Solar Power Magazine is one.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
All right. And we should make sure Gib, I know Zero Waste Vashon is interested in all kinds of savings, efficiency, recycling, sustainability. I don't know, Gib, if you want to just shout out to folks how they can make sure to follow along the Zero Waste Vashon work that's being done.
Sure. The best way is to follow, sign up for our newsletter. Which we do keep to quarterly. We don't give out your email address, but that's the best way to get caught up. It's an extremely local, community-driven organization, and the newsletter is therefore community-related. That's literally the best way to get into it. ZWV is actively looking for participants. To either carve out some interesting projects on the island, like the potential to define compostables, like the RNG, like the helping Impact Bioenergy now CHOMP with the anaerobic digester, pushing for a three-bin system for this island, which we are entitled to and needs to happen. And We are really hopeful that we will have a compost facility budgeted for this island soon.
And so once again, that's zerowastevashon.org for your website, correct? Okay.
Correct.
And I think it is that hopefulness that is so prevalent in this work and the green energy industry and taking advantage of all those opportunities that so far have seemed to have eluded us. I do want to, first of all, thank Mason and Gib for being here to talk about solar energy on Vashon. Gib, all the work that you cited that had been done in the past, which really has led us to this point. You're, of course, very welcome to stay on for the rest of the show. We got another 10 minutes or so. I do have a public service announcement on this regard, though. This is a bit ahead, so get out your pencils. December 21st is the meeting of the Vashon Mori Community Council. That meeting is at 7 p.m. It's either online. You can find their location at v-mcc.org. 7 p.m. December 21st, meeting of the community council. If you want to support the Vashon Mori environment and climate agenda, which includes these community solar and net metering items that Mason just talked about, show up at that meeting. There's going to be a motion. You will be able to vote yes, that you support the motion, which will ask our legislators to support the bills that Mason talked about. So that's another way that you can get involved in helping move the ball forward. All right. Now, our Guardian of the Galaxy, Truman.
Yeah, sorry. As long as we're doing PSAs, I have a real short one as well. And I didn't need to plug something that Voice of Vashon is doing. We have our Lip Sync Birthday Bash coming up on November 16th. That's a huge thing. It's at the open space. We're accepting entries for the live event. These are people who can do lip sync. And if folks want to do videos like we've had in the past, which are hilarious, those have to be in by November 1st. So anyway, that's opened up to anyone who wants to do it. But those folks who want to do the live show, they can also put their names in. Arlette Moody's going to be our MC. It's going to be a real hoot. So November 16th.
All right. Fantastic. Hey, let's move on to another hot topic on Vashon, affordable housing. You know, Bruce Hallman and Terry Donnelly had an excellent article in the Beachcomber article, and thank goodness Bruce is saving the galaxy. He would otherwise be here to talk about that. But it was a fascinating history of the housing on Vashon Mori. So if you haven't read that Beachcomber article, do so. I'm wondering what affordable housing changes do we hope to see now that our listeners have this awareness of the history, and particularly the recent history of lack of affordability and gentrification. Gib, I know you're an affordable housing advocate. I'm just curious, what affordable housing changes do you hope we see here on the island in the near term?
Well, I think we are making concrete progress, which is really great. And frankly, we're very lucky to have Vashon Household advocating. One thing that I would ask the county to realize that they need to consider is there are no considerations, financial considerations, passed on to affordable income housing. You can qualify for all sorts of grants and low income loans, if you have a certain percentage, something like close to a third of those units that are benefiting financed occupied by potentially or homeless folks. So there's no vehicle, if you will, to maintain affordable income housing, which is very, very important, because what we're finding is all those mom and pop organizations like Deb's and mine are being picked up by developers, and they expect to make the high return rate. 3 years ago, the average one-bedroom apartment in King County was $1,950 a month plus utilities. How on earth are we going to be able to hit that mark for our population? So that's one thing King County really needs to think in terms of a financial help out for affordable housing.
Absolutely. And thank you for jumping in with that, Gib. I don't know if any other comments about the article, briefly had a chance to read up on that.
Well, yes. Real quickly, I'd like someone to comment. I mean, I have my opinions on the subject, but there are individuals on the island, as progressive as we claim to be, who may not understand why affordable housing is a good idea. And what is affordable housing? We hear about affordable housing, and then you see some of the larger developments or larger home developments that are hardly affordable by many people who are lower income. Why do we want affordable housing on Vashon?
Yeah, and I know I have an opinion about that. One is that our people who work in those businesses that we have on the island are increasingly finding it difficult to be able to live on the island. I know in my history, when I moved to Vashon, there were probably quite a few folks who worked at K2. And then as things shifted in the economy and the housing affordability problem, more and more people were commuting to the island to work for K2, including the K2 bus that would be at the north end of the island and transport employees from mainly Southworth, I think, down to the factory. Even that over time went away. And part of that might have been K2's choice about where they manufactured their products, but I suspect a lot of it was economics. And that's certainly what I hear today from business owners is a really major concern that we just can't find employees. Because they can't live on the island, and it's too difficult, costly, and unreliable, to go back and forth on the ferries.
That's a very pragmatic answer. There's no question about that. No, seriously, there's also the whole issue of the benefits of economic diversity. Do we want to live in a bubble, or a ghetto, if you will, of upper middle class, individuals? Do we want to have nothing but a bedroom community? Don't we all benefit from having a wide variety of individuals and experiences, et cetera, on the island? And affordable housing certainly would contribute to that.
Absolutely. So lots of answers to that really, really good question. All right, we are just a couple of minutes left before we head out. So another public service announcement regarding affordable housing. I would say join the under new management affordable housing committee of the Vashon Murray Community Council. The committee has been working for some time now, but it turns out that Terry Sullivan and Art Chippendale have now recently decided to be co-leaders of that committee as they work to rejuvenate and continue this work that's happening on the island. So Terry Sullivan, you can get in touch with Terry, get out your pencils, 206-463-2812. I know Terry would love to hear from you if you'd like to support the work of the Affordable Housing Committee. Also, as we take our time to depart this week, our guests for the next edition of the Brown Briefly will be Angela Marshall and Martha Woodward, both running for Vashon School Board. Truman, you're going to be interviewing the two of them.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll look forward to hearing what they have to say. Meanwhile, please make a plan to vote by Tuesday, November 7th. You either need to get your ballot into a ballot drop box by 8 o'clock on Tuesday, November 7th, or the U.S. Post Office suggests you mail it a week earlier, meaning the 31st. So that would be just the day after the next show, where you can hear from those two school board members. The last thing I want to say before we say for Truman, Bruce, Craig, Gibb, Mason, and I, Kevin Jones, see you next week is rest in power, Scott Durkee. You are loved and will be missed.
Absolutely.